What is really going on, crypto savages? You are listening to the Coin Spice podcast with host C. Edward Kelso, editor-in-chief at coinspice.io, your home for spicy crypto things on the net.
What is really going on, crypto savages? This is your host, C. Edward Kelso, editor-in-chief out at coinspice.io, back with another episode of the Coin Spice podcast. I've got Adam Kokesh. He is running for president of the United States. He is a libertarian activist, an anarchist, a voluntarist. He is a crypto enthusiast from way back, and he is not afraid to mix it up. He likes to fight. He likes to challenge ideas, whether it's interpersonal, online, or even with police. If you know anything about Adam, he ain't shy. So we were set to talk about all things presidential, all things crypto, and how that plays into it. And we do. We spend a great deal of the episode doing that. But then Acapulco happened. If you haven't already heard, a cryptocurrency advocate by the nom de plume named John Galton and his partner, Lily Devine, were involved in looks like a targeted hit. Some are saying it's a cartel hit in Acapulco. Some are saying it's an inside job. Some are pointing to a certain person as the main culprit. But the end here is that John Galton was murdered. And CoinSpice was one of the first, at least in the crypto sphere, to run the story. And we put up videos. They're horrifying. Video snippets of Lily, you know, basically pleading for help minutes after the murder. And of course, Jason Henza, who had been shot, you know, almost praying for his life, really. And so it galvanized the community. A lot of people liked the tone of the article. The Washington Post picked it up, Daily Beast, San Jose Mercury News. It got out there, and we managed to make some news with regard to some of the sources we cited. Enter Adam Kokesh. He kind of came out of nowhere, started injecting himself into the debate. I'm not sure if he was asked or if he volunteered it, or whether he was responding to comments related to his possible participation in Anarcopulco, which has something loosely to do with John and Lily, in the sense that John and Lily had forked the conference and started their own called Anarcoforco. Anyway, that's a whole other conversation. But anyway, Adam gets into the debate somehow and really starts to put it out there. He's naming names and he's his theories and he's warning people. And so he became news. And I offered him the platform to come on, talk about, like I say, the presidential race, his activism, crypto. And then we got into to Acapulco. So it's such a long episode. I decided to leave it as one thing, and then to break it up into two separate parts in addition. So basically, I'm going to put three different episodes of this particular podcast online, so you can kind of decide whether you want to hear the whole thing in context, you just want to go about the activism and him running for president, which is super interesting, and or you just want to hear what he has to say about Anarcopulco, Acapulco, John Galton, Lily, all that good stuff. Just to put my biases out there, I am a fellow traveler in anarchist circles. I've followed Adam's activist career for years. I find his tactics not things that I would do, but I always kind of learn something from them. And with regard to the Anarcopulco fellows and team, I have a strong connection to them. I was one of the first interviews Jeff Berwick gave way back when, and long before Anarcopulco, and he's always been very kind to me, given his time, and you know, so I have no issue with the guy whatsoever. Also, more recently, I interviewed community producer or manager of Anarcopulco, Dana Martin, and she actually is a personal hero. I really do admire her, as I'm sure you can follow in the show notes to that particular episode. So I don't really have a dog in the fight. I if anything, I probably lean more an Acapulco team. But I felt like it was important to get Adam out there, get him talking, so you don't just hear the static 2D. We put it in one place. You can hear his arguments right now as of Friday, February the 7th, and where he thinks and what he's thinking about. And you can make up your own mind. Anyway, you'll listen to it. So here is the second half of the episode on Acapulco, the murder of John Galton, and some of Adam's theories and prescriptions for how to deal with it. Without any further ado, here is the second part of a hour-long episode with presidential candidate Adam Kokesh.
Happening in Acapulco, and I'll just get right into it then. We were one of the first outlets, at least in the cryptosphere, to kind of break the story, and then the Washington Post took it, quoted us, Daily Beast, we're all over the place. And
Dan, thank you for stepping up there as a journalist.
Well, it was important for us to cover it for the reasons that I think I've explained to you, but also because of how the media was handling it. But you come from a very interesting perspective on this, because you've actually been to the gathering that John and Lily forked. I have to be careful. Mm-hmm. And for those who don't know, a man by the name of John Galton, and his partner, who went by the name of Lily Devine, were down, and they were part of the anarchist community in Acapulco, Mexico. I think they were in part lured in a positive way, by Anarcapulco and some of the community a few years mm-hmm. back, and how that worked out. And then either they got disenchanted with the organizing of it, or just thought they could do something better. It's very much in the spirit.
Well, and if I may jump in there.
Go right ahead.
Worth illuminating that when you say lured, and I'm glad you clarified that, this was, you know, the central idea that Jeff Berwick put forth about living in Mexico as opposed to the United States, that, you know, even though the murder rates are higher if you're not involved with the cartels, it's safer overall. And, you know, I never had, I think it's all still, you know, reasonably safe, although my basis of comparison is Fallujah. So, you know, maybe that's not a great, you know, standard. But, I you know, if they say the murder rate in Acapulco is, oh my gosh, twice what it is in Chicago, which is, I think, what they've been saying, right, in the mainstream articles, and the first, a few of the mainstream media articles, I think it came from the AP one, pointed that out.
Right.
Like, your odds of getting murdered walking down the streets of Chicago are infinitesimally small. So twice of infinitesimally small is still very, very, very small. But this general idea that living in Mexico allowed for more freedom in the United States and was reasonably safe. And I think that idea has total legitimate merit. And I think that people who don't like where they live in the United States should consider that. I never went to make that decision for myself. You know, I believe that the United States is one of the best places on earth to live overall. It's an incredible statist nationalist community, if you will. You know, and it's also, you know, it's the United States is at the same time the seat of the biggest empire the world has ever known, and possibly our only hope of stopping it. So I'm kind of committed to here, and I never had to do that calculus for myself. Should I live in Mexico or not? Right. But a lot of people, well, I should say at least a few dozen people did as a result of Jeff's promotion, and that's the genesis of the anarchist voluntarist community in Acapulco.
It caught on, and a lot of people went down there, including John and Lily, and they joined the gathering there a few times and got a little bit of notoriety. And then decided to fork it, which in the crypto community is very, very much in line with our thinking. You sort of take from the previous incarnations of something, and then you kind of go your own way if you don't like how things are going. And fork for us, for a lot, not everybody in the space for sure, but fork for us means a kind of freedom. So they forked it off.
Absolutely.
Anarco-forco, or yep. Anarca-forco. And so the Forco idea started, I guess, last year, and they got some participants and did well. Then I'm not sure what happens next in terms of their involvement. There's rumors. There's a bunch of screenshots out there that have been sent to me, hearsay and all this other stuff. What we got back from people there, which is really all I could go with at the time, and these kind of stories, I have to kind of preface it for listeners who aren't, you know, knee-deep in news. Ironically, they get clearer the further you move away from them. So the more time it takes, it actually, you learn more, because what you get initially is emotional reactions. We posted the horrifying video, Lily and Jason, and it's terrifying to watch. And so we, at this point, all I have is hearsay and circumstantial evidence, but what the community has, even that's fuzzy, but I'm going to go with it anyway. What the community has put forward is that this was a cartel hit of some kind, and cartel is certainly big.
Hold on. Let's be precise. I just want to say, let's be precise with our language. When you say the community has put forth this, I think it's worth identifying that everybody who jumped on that story right away and put forth, it was a cartel, that they were competing with cartels, everything is safe. It wasn't the community as a whole. The community as a whole questioned this right away. Those were people who are organizing and promoting and have an interest in the main Anarcho-Volco conference.
And
the Mexican authorities and the mainstream media who put this simple, straightforward narrative of John was a threat to the cartels and the cartels killed him. And this is a
cartel hit. That was sort of my point, in that it's the word cartel along with the word community there, especially the word cartel, has a very dog whistle-y type response from the United States. And it's kind of a just so story. It wraps everything in a bow, and oh, okay, this was some dirty hit, he was killed by the cartel. Go ahead, sorry.
Since you raised the term cartel, I wanted to, for the purpose of this conversation, when I use the word cartel, I'm not talking about business cartels or monopolies. We're talking very specifically about the large underground businesses that deal drugs based out of Mexico that are extremely violent.
Right. And that's an important distinction to make, especially in our world where, you know, cartel is used, you know, both pejoratively and positively, but we mean it in the stereotypical sense, as it's popularly understood.
We're not trying to debate the application use or definition or scope of the word cartel. We're talking about the cartels in Mexico. You know what we mean.
Yeah, they're notorious, and okay. I'll just say this. Another public statement we released, which was semi-public on a Telegram group that we released by Lily, she made no mention of a cartel. And she, in fact, said, or kind of cryptically, for lack of a better phrase or pun, that watch out for other anarchists. And she put it in quotes.
We can say now, she has stated publicly that it was Paul behind it. And she has also stated publicly that she is waiting to tell the complete story. And she has removed her video, although it's been reposted several places. So she has come out and directly said Paul was behind this. She has done it cryptically in a few places, but she's done it directly publicly at least once that I'm aware of.
And we published...
And it's semi-public. Semi-public. It's like a...
We published the accusation. We published his name,
Okay.
So we did that as a quote, you know, because it was relevant. And again, parts, I should say, of the community, whoever that is, are dismissing it, or now they're saying maybe it wasn't that and it's the cartel. This is a really long way to get to a question for you. You've weighed in on it. You've come in with a sledgehammer here, and you have really, really weighed in on Twitter, I think on Facebook and on Telegram. So what? Let's kind of flesh out what you think about all this.
Well, I'm going to be very hesitant you know, Ed, as we discuss in what I'm going to say in a sure. public forum about this, and part of it is that I don't want to put somebody off until we know who's really behind this. Although, you know, I was already on Jeff's bad side because, and this is like, you know, full disclosure of my background conflict with him, that, you know, I was supposed to get paid for speaking at last year's conference with a gold sponsorship and was blown off by him and the organizers during the conference about it. And they just kept making excuses as to why they couldn't do it. And I was supposed to get like a double whatever something for this year. And when I started, you know, demanding what I was promised for compensation, that's when he uninvited me using Larkin's bullshit attack against me as the excuse for that. And, it, you know, so I at that point, I was already like, you know, all right, I get it. You know, and Jeff was ghosting on me during this time. And you know, again, we've seen this publicly. I'm just going to stop myself right there talking about Jeff. But I will say just one thing, that I do regret my role in helping him establish credibility in general, in doing interviews with him and supporting him, you know, in going to his conference and speaking at his conference. I think I should have heeded the warnings about him that I saw online about bad business practices. And this is something I do want to make as a really important public statement that, you know, I made the mistake of thinking, oh, he's come out and said that he's a voluntarist now. He must be a good guy now. And, you know, that's there's so many fallacies behind that. But that's the temptation, because I know that I'm a voluntarist because I'm a good guy, because I care about people, because I want to see the world be a better place for people, because I believe in ethics and justice and principles. But just someone saying that, or saying that they agree with you on that, or recognizing that fundamental truth, doesn't change their true nature. And I think Jeff's true nature has been revealed in all this. And he even publicly threatened me today on Facebook and said, and this is the quote, "I'm taking you out next." So, like, this is someone who has serious anger issues and self-control issues. And I don't think there should be a community or a conference around him. And again, I'm sorry for any role that I had in bringing him up or in the movement or in his credibility. As for his role in this murder, I don't know anything for certain. So I don't want to say anything else because it's all speculative and it'd be irresponsible to sort of, you know, name him as a suspect. But I'm not the first one to mention that possibility. And I wouldn't be mentioning it now publicly if I couldn't point out that Paul, the gentleman who was fingered in this immediately by Lily, has come out and suggested this theory that I hadn't even, that was a little just too crazy of all the things that I was considering. But Paul has come out and publicly said, at least suggested this theory, that this was somehow an inside job, and that Jeff basically arranged for it. And I don't even want to say anything more about that. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's public. If people want to go to my personal Facebook page and see the statements that I've made thus far, you know, hey, get into it. If you really want, like, you want to get into this murder mystery, you could be on this for a long time. There are two semi-public chats on Telegram. One is called Drama Polko Uncensored, and you can get on that and see my conversations in there. And then one is just Anarchapulco something or other. But if you search Telegram for Anarchapulco, you can find a couple of groups there and join or lurk or what have you. And there are a lot of screenshots being passed around and all of there. You can read a handful of mainstream media stories. You can see the one that was more comprehensive that came out today, that was the second one to hit the Drudge Report from the Daily Beast. Yeah. Second one was Drudge. First one from the Daily Beast. I believe it had to air the day before. They linked to the Washington Times, which was just basically the AP story. So I'm a little concerned that this is going to be used as a story like against anarchism, you know, voluntarism specifically.
Well, that was...
I'm digging. I'm trying to get to the bottom of this. I'm putting stuff together here.
So, you're relevant for a couple of reasons, as you've explained, but working into what I consider to be the deeper subject, if anybody can put aside, you know, the murder idea, which I realize sounds coarse, but so for the second, for the brief second, put aside the intrigue that is the murder.
Yeah, let me. So if you're going to change the subject that way, I do want to make clear, and I think you would join me in the sentiment. I mean, my first priority here is to find out what happened so that people are safe. I am concerned that whatever threat this is, even if this was just a cartel hit, I mean, if it's that easy to get, like, and the organizers of the conference seem to be brushing this fact under the rug as they promote this official story that it was a simple cartel hit and that John was killed for competing with the cartels. And I don't really believe that. I think that's unlikely. It's possible, but from everything we know, his business was extremely limited, very small at most. And he hadn't been, according to some people, dealing coke for months. And what he was like, it was just, but even if that's the truth, I can't eliminate that possibility. Jeff Berwick says he has contacts with the cartels and has confirmed that that's what it was, but hasn't substantiated that at all. But if that's true, then you're hosting a conference where you're selling drugs. And I mean the psychedelics in the ceremonies there. And you have people openly talking about drug use around a conference there. You shouldn't be telling people everything's okay. You should be telling people we're taking extra security measures. Hmm. You know, if not like, hey, this isn't safe right now. So it's still possible that this mainstream story is the correct one. It just, the more you look into it, the less likely that it seems. And the more craziness and dishonesty you see around it, that's very alarming. I'm sorry to change subjects again, but yeah, it's just, the intent here is I'm concerned about people's safety and I'm concerned about justice.
And did you know either John or Lily?
Yes, but only somewhat in passing. We had hung out and just chatted briefly at Anarchopolco, I think last year and the year before. And maybe we'd chatted a few times online or on Messenger, but it was very, very limited.
Okay. And so I think what, at least for the relevant side here, because we've kind of hit a snag where we don't really know what's going on. We have some ideas, some, I guess, intuitions about it, but I think right away, people are going to say, do you see what happens when you do the crypto and the anarchy thing? A bunch of yahoos gets involved and they can't control themselves. And then they da, 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 da. I saw a post today that I thought was, if there's going to be any silver lining to this so far. And again, it's very early. People were saying, you know, people aren't running to the cops yet. People aren't doing this. You know, the community's trying to come together and work itself out in clumsy ways, you know, we're trying to figure it out. There's debates, there's infighting. It's just kind of all the...
There's a vibrant conversation around this. But no, the thing about going to the cops, first of all, we don't know what Lily and Jason was a gentleman who was wounded on the scene.
Right.
And again, a lot of people are pointing out that the odds of him being shot three times and none of them hitting bone and only needing 6 hours of hospital treatment and then being released and then going home is unusual, that a cartel would attack a group of three people, kill one, wound one, and leave one, you know, also very unusual. But there's a dead body. The Mexican police know about it. They're investigating this as much as they
The American Embassy knows about it. Yeah.
Based on their incentives. The American Embassy knows about it, and they're investigating it at least as much as they normally would an American death in Mexico. So there's nothing to be done by calling on government at this point. And I don't think anybody investigating is contacting members of the community to try to untangle the mystery and see what the motivations are. And the thing is, I also want to point out that we might never know. That this could be one of those things that unless someone admits to what happened, you know, I've been following this since it happened on February 1st. And today is February 7th. And you know, after two or three days, you know, I hit this wall of there's sort of these three possibilities that, you know, either it was an inside job or it was a simple cartel hit or it was some kind of hired hit. You know, we're kind of, you know, at this wall in terms of the investigation right now, or at least I am. Excuse me, I am. Where, and I'm not going to say anything about, you know, because I've been sent a lot of stuff that, like, I have so much more background on this and stuff I can't share.
Sure.
But I can say that none of the information I have really would confirm or rule out any of those three possibilities. And that in and of itself is kind of scary and disturbing. And I think anybody who goes and looks into this is going to have, you know, I've asked half a dozen people I know who are close to the situation now, what's your best theory and why?
Right.
And I've gotten six different answers.
Sure, sure. And this goes to the heart of what I'd kind of, you know, more or less end on here, which is, okay, so from my perspective, my dealings with Anarcapulco and I guess Dana, have been very, very, very pleasant, awesome. I just want to put it out there. And I've had no issues with them whatsoever. So this is not, I'm not putting Adam on to throw shade or anything. This is, Adam was a part of the, or, you know, part of the, that particular community for a while, as he's talked about. And he has weighed in as a celebrity within this community. He's crypto relevant. He can speak to a lot of these issues. The reason that I want Adam on so badly is really for this question, which is, does this essentially, you know, does this prove the anarchy idea can't work? And more importantly, how does the community move forward in when something like this happens? That's so there's the public, we've talked about the mainstream conception, and then there's the community sort of trying to work itself out. And then, you know, like what, as a leader is, I don't want to, you know, bestow that on you because I'm.
Thank you.
But as a vocal, you know, activist proponent.
Yeah, sure. No, I get it.
How do we go forward? How does this work itself out? What do you suggest?
Well, I got to respond to, you know, a lot of what you said in there, and this is challenging for me. I'm not here to say that, you know, I've got all the answers or I've got this all figured out. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone is trying to say, oh, because one person got killed, this philosophy is wrong or doesn't work. I don't think they're going to that. But for the people, I mean, one of the reasons the mainstream media is picking up on this, like they are, is that most people do not think like us. You know, white male INTJ analytical personality type that just like has to figure out objective truths. And even we have to admit that in most regards, and big sidebar here, when I give speeches, sometimes I always like to put my audiences on the spot, but sometimes I'll say, how many of you designed the cut of the shirt that you're wearing right now? And most of them, you know, no one said, you know, there's a smart answer, but, you know, smart ass answer, but nobody raises their hand or anything or says, yeah, I designed my shirt. And I say, well, look, in the area of fashion and design, you're all a bunch of sheeple followers then, you know? Like, you know, it's just put yourselves in the shoes of people who feel about politics and government and the big issues of justice that we care about the way that we think about fashion. you know, and they see a story like this and they go, oh, they might, and they're not thinking on an analytical philosophical level, but what they do see, and this is the legitimate threat here, and this is why the mainstream is pouncing on this, is not to discredit the philosophy. I don't think they're reaching to that. But they are trying to discredit the lifestyle and sort of the philosophy by proxy. So if you say, look, living like an anarchist will get you killed, don't be an anarchist.
Right.
Then, you know, that's all they have to do to have that general negative effect that they're always looking to have here. And this isn't some conspiracy. This is just, you know, the ideology of most people in the media reflects the ideology of most people in the population, plus the spring pullers getting extra weight.
You hit it totally on the head. And we put up the snippets of the Facebook videos from Jason and Lily, and the comments on YouTube, I mean, I'm sure you're used to it, but would make your hair curl. It sounds like someone did, you know, it was a gift, you know, it sounds like great, you know, this, there was, you know, these, you know, so you
yeah, well, one less hippie, yes, kind of
thing. Yes. And I was blown away by it, which may say more about me than them. But anyway, I'm sorry.
also, bear in mind, I mean, the YouTube comment section is a very strong filter in the sense that it filters in the worst. And it's also one that's heavily been dominated by bots and trolls for a long time. So, like, I mean, I consider, like, Facebook to be, like, the infected, pus-filled, seeping, septic underbelly of the public conversation. But then YouTube is, like, what the shit from that, or I should say, YouTube comment sections are what the shit from Facebook drips onto.
Right.
You know, like, it's even one level worse. So take that all with a grain of salt and know that there are deliberate efforts to derail, divert, and spread FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt in that conversation. Anybody who's listening right now who's gotten this far into this interview who hasn't heard of COINTELPRO, go look up COINTELPRO. It's exactly how it sounds. It's a portmanteau that the FBI came up with for counterintelligence program. It's what they did to mess with activists in the 60s and 70s. There's a great Wikipedia article on it. Do a little more research, but you better frickin' know, if you want to keep up with this conversation, what COINTELPRO is. So there's part of your question I haven't gotten to yet, right? What do we do here?
Yeah.
And actually, first, about the lifestyle thing, I think there is a deliberate point of reflection that the movement should take here on what kind of lifestyles are we promoting, because a lot of people are very reactionary in their libertarianism, that they you know, proudly call themselves anarchists when they're anarcho-capitalists or voluntarists. I think it's a bad misnomer, but it's a long separate debate about semantics we get into. But there is a sort of reactionaryism that is really personified by John and Lily Forrester, Galton, or Divine, however you want to refer to them.
Right.
I think John Galton is the, we should be embracing that. That's the main, you know, hashtag John Galton. That's how we're going to be identifying the story for a long time. It's the John Galton murder. Two people openly calling themselves anarchists, fleeing charges in the United States in order to set up shop where they're doing publicly drug-related stuff in Mexico. Yeah, that's going to be risky, one way or another.
Right.
Whereas what I've chosen is my expression of this, my, you know, my ultimate expression of this lifestyle. For me, it's living self-sufficiently off the grid. And living in, you know, as much as possible an ethical lifestyle, and, you know, raising kids, I hope someday, unschooled, and, you know, with an ethical respect for their personhood as human beings. and to, you know, be an advocate for this message as best I can. So, you know, and maybe that's, to a lot of people, my position is already very extreme. You know, and I do live like government doesn't exist in a lot of ways, but I don't pretend that it doesn't. You know, and so maybe it's, you know, getting, you know, being more careful about who we as honest libertarians associate with. And if it's someone like Jeff Berwick, people who have been caught publicly lying, people who have used dishonesty to promote their interests, to hurt other people like himself and you know, I mean, I guess I can say publicly, Jessica Kill, the main conference organizer this year, who really has rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. A lot of people, like, you know, not just for me being uninvited, but for Derek Brose being uninvited, for policies around tickets and prices going up and value going down and so many other things. This just drama and nonsense around the conference. Anyway, I just hope everyone stays safe, you know, at least until we find out what's really happened here. If we ever do, if not, I hope everyone, you know, is paying enough attention, who's close to this, to adjust their security mentality accordingly. If you are going to Anarchapulco, if you bought tickets and paid for the hotel and you don't think there's any particular danger and you want to support the conference, you know, just please be as careful as you can. I think the best advice is, you know, don't leave the hotel. Don't piss anybody off. This is a good time. And I'm a little afraid for myself here, having stepped in this vocally, publicly a little bit, but you know, I couldn't hold back what I've observed and what I've seen so far. You know, and I, again, I've never suggested publicly in any way that Jeff has anything to do with the murder. That's what Paul has done publicly. But there is enough dishonesty around Jeff Berwick from him himself that I've experienced, that other people have experienced. I don't think there should be a community around him. I think if Anarchapulco is going to continue at all, it should be handed off to the community somehow, or at least to a trusted community and run like a nonprofit. So it can't just be, you know, Jeff's scam drama circle. Who knows what he's doing, with you know, the money around all of this, given his track record here. So, and again, I'm doing my best to speak precisely here. I really encourage everyone, if you're going to do any kind of, make any kind of decisions, think for yourself, check sources, check references, question everything, question people who are telling you, question me, because I might be wrong. I'll tell you, I will never publicly lead you astray. I can't say I'll never lie, because if you put a gun to my head like a cop, I will lie to you. In order to get that gun pointed away from me, I believe that lying is a violation of lying is, can be an act of aggression. But in that same sense, it can be defensive. I will never lie to you in my own interest or lie to you, in any kind of deceptive way, but I may be misinformed. There's a lot of misinformation around this. I'm being fed conflicting accounts of several elements of the story by people who are close to it. So I may have some facts wrong in my analysis. But generally, you know, my advice is think for yourself. You know what the right thing to do is for you. Do that. Do it with confidence. Do it with a smile on your face. Be happy that you're alive and breathing in a world full of beautiful, wonderful, loving people. And it's unfortunate that we have to have these conversations every now and then, but someone has been killed, and we're willing to, we should be willing to have the serious conversations that reflect just a basic value for human life and wanting to protect it and defend it and find out what's really going on here. So, Ed, I don't know if that's what you wanted to close on, but that's pretty much all I have to say about it. And you know, I want to thank everybody for listening with an open mind about this. And if people have any information that they think would be useful in figuring out what has happened here, please share it with me. You can find me on Telegram. I think if you just search for my name, although that's kind of private, and I'm there by my phone number, which I'd like to keep private.
we'll leave my private. Do you want us to link to it?
No, but people can email me at my general public email address, adam@thefreedomline.com. If you have anything, any insights about this to share that I haven't obviously covered, please help me out here. If you look at the evidence and find something, please let me know. If you have information that I don't have, please help me out. I think there are only a handful of people who are really tracking this like I am, and only a handful of people who are closer to it that might have information that I don't. And also, if you have specific questions for me, I've pretty much said everything I'm going to say publicly or share publicly on Facebook. But if you email me and say you have some particular reason that you need me to substantiate something with screenshots, you're not just show me because prove whatever you said. But if you have a reason, I'm happy to share whatever background evidence I have to people who are serious about helping figure this out or get justice in this case.
Well, man, I lied to you. I said I was going to have you for a half an hour, and you stayed on for...
That's my fault for interrupting, but I'm very aware. And thank you for acknowledging that. It's been a pleasure, and I really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, man. Take good care of yourself. We will link to all things Adam Kokesh in the show notes here. But he is, as he says, out there. Thanks again, Adam, for coming on, man. And take good care of yourself.
My pleasure, brother. Peace and love to you.